Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
Hello, I'm Richard Hattersley, and welcome to No Account for Taste, where this week we'll be discussing the return of our old friend, Making Tax Digital, the VAT cut for the hospitality sector, and whether the summer statement measures will actually make any difference at all. Joining me to discuss all this on NFAT, we have a regular and Praxis Web's head of content. It's Ray Newman. Hi, Ray. Thanks for returning to the podcast.
Hello, Richard. Thank you for having me, as always.
And we also have another returning guest from episode 43 of this fine show. Yes, dear No Account for Taste listeners, let me welcome back Ben Still, the Managing Director of Still Financial Chartered Accountants. Hi, Ben. Thanks for returning.
No problem at all. Nice to be here again.
Well, Ben, the last time you were on the show, a couple of comments stand out to me, and I'll just remind you of them. So you said, "I can't remember the last time I had a lunch break, and sadly, most days go without lunch. It used to be a problem, but now it is just natural." And you also said, "I'm checking emails right up until my head hits the pillow, and sometimes as my head is on the pillow." And I read this, Ben, just because that was, I don't know, episode 43, probably about 12 months ago. And now, over the last several months, we've had the most, it's felt like self-assessment season's been continuing on from January until where we are now in July. So I'm concerned about you, Ben. How are you doing? How's it been?
Well, I now can't remember the last time I even saw my pillow, to be fair, is how it feels. It is quite funny because sort of 6 months following that last time, you know, things got much better, the firm was growing, and as we recruited more, my workload slowly started to reduce, and that was great. And then lockdown hit, and now I feel like I'm back at the beginning of starting my firm from scratch and sort of just struggling to stay afloat, mentally, I guess, if anything. I can't even put the last few months into words, to be honest.
So how have you managed to stay on top of just the onslaught of guidance, which has just been coming out? At one point, it felt like every day there was a new measure and a new initiative just to get your head around.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was quite lucky to an extent with my firm where we were 100% digital from day one. But until this, it never really got put to the test. And suddenly, overnight, we were told we had to stay at home and somehow keep running the business. We packed up overnight, we came in on an evening, got all of the equipment we needed, all went off home, and being fully digital was put to the test. And as I said, luckily, you know, we'd always claimed to be it, and luckily we'd backed that up without realizing how digital we had become. So from sort of a normal workflow point of view, it didn't matter too much. But then, as you said, the daily announcements hit. And obviously you had the sad part of the daily announcements of the deaths and stuff like that, but you also had constant new legislation, new schemes, new assistants, and in our industry, every one of those announcements were relevant, and different announcements meant different things for different clients, and suddenly this was all coming at us at once, and it was quite daunting at the beginning. And the way I chose to approach it was to just sort of, you know, stay up till gone midnight on the night of an announcement, read as many notes and details as HMRC had actually released, which always seemed to come a week or so after the announcement, which was always helpful. And send out an email and say to clients, okay, straight away tomorrow morning, jump on the webinar, I'm going to go through as much detail as I can. And we just tried to tackle it in sort of large groups. So rather than, you know, 20 million phone calls a day to everybody, we'd do a webinar, and after the webinar we'd then have like a live Q&A where everybody could sort of ask their own personal questions, and we were just sort of trying to tackle it like that. But as the announcements increased, and it did seem like two or three times a week constantly, it was getting tough, because, you know, we had to do normal submissions, we had to do normal work, but at the same time we had to do all of this extra out of nowhere. It was tough, really tough.
It seems like a common theme that we're hearing every time we have a guest on and we ask them a similar question. It's the same stories keep coming up, and I don't think anyone's really had an easy ride during this period. It's just been, for many people, just a complete one long day of just sheer excessive workload, hasn't it?
It did start to blur into one long day. I think, you know, the moments of sleep were just to recharge, ready for a new announcement, it felt like. And it did, yeah, the days, you know, the days and the weeks. And I think at that point, you know, you could only leave your house for an hour a day anyway. So most of the time you were just thinking, well, if I'm sat here, I may as well be working and helping clients. And it's the first time I think we had that many sort of emotional, personal phone calls with clients. We had a lot of clients, you know, in tears, and worrying and panicking about how them and their family will even survive when these businesses were their lifeline. Mm-hmm. And we've never, you know, as a practice and as a profession, we've never had that, you know, that level of emotional connection with our clients in that much sort of bulk, I guess.
Well, and has it sort of eased slightly for you now, the workload?
Yes and no. So there's less panic, which essentially means there's less emails, less phone calls, less, you know, weekly webinars. So from that point of view, yes. But as we've all said, these announcements are still coming right up until yesterday. So in terms of extra work and extra knowledge and extra research and everything else, to an extent, no, actually. And obviously furlough continues. So those sort of additional submissions and workload is carrying on still. So yes and no. Yes, less stress and less sort of emotion, but no, still additional workload and schemes coming out.
Well, Ben, you mentioned there about another announcement which happened this past week. And I think that's a nice segue into the look back at the biggest stories to hit the profession, as we usually do on the podcast. And so I guess rather than tell you what the biggest news story was this past week, I'm going to just read a few Accounter Web comments and just let you both guess. So one member said, good job, I'm quitting next year, when they heard the announcement that we're about to talk about. Another one said, I think the words good luck with that spring to mind. Another one said, we'll believe it when it happens. I wasted far too many hours on their initial plans, not making that mistake again. And another person said, oh God, can I put everything in place to sell up before April 23? My retirement may be forced upon me a few years earlier than planned. So Ray, Ben, I'll give you a couple of guesses. What is the biggest news story from the past week?
Well, as it has been for the last few years on and off, it's making tax digital, isn't it, Richard?
Absolutely. Yep. This is indeed the news that the government plans to expand MTD reporting regime to all VAT registered businesses from April 2022 and all unincorporated businesses and landlords turning over more than 10,000 the following year. So this was announced by the Financial Secretary to the Treasury, Jesse Norman, who set out the rationale in a written statement and said, the COVID-19 pandemic highlighted the need for a more flexible, resilient and responsive tax system that provides businesses and HMRC with more up-to-date information on businesses and their finances and enables easier identification and better targeting of taxpayer support. So Ray, the first point about this announcement, which came pretty much out of the blue, is the timing of it. You posted on your LinkedIn about the timing of this announcement, and usually there would be a lead up to these announcements, but this one sort of came out of the blue, didn't it?
Absolutely out of the blue, yeah. So really the first I heard of it was when I saw other people on LinkedIn posting a link to the Making Tax Digital news about 5 minutes after it appeared, and there didn't seem to be any trail of it. I mean, we've got quite used to, in the last few weeks, the last few months, the government telling us it's going to announce something, then telling us what it's planning to announce, then announcing it. And by the time the announcement happens, we essentially have all of the detail. So on this occasion, they went absolutely the opposite way. And it was a really big chunk of stuff announced just by dropping documents on a web page, essentially. And as we've talked about before, it goes the other way as well. There have been times in the last few months when they've just announced things on Saturday afternoons, or something's come out in the evening press conference we weren't expecting. So we just don't know what to expect. And I think it's this, and I know quite a lot of accountants feel the same, those happy days of boring Philip Hammond, who would stick to a schedule, announce things and absolutely stick to his guns, you know, just not, he wasn't into surprising people. And that was actually, as a journalist, that's really helpful, because, you know, you can prep a team and you can get things sort of half written before the announcement. And as an accountant, it means, you know, you're not dealing with all this sort of shocks and, as you say, phones ringing off the hook, Ben, from people who just suddenly want to know what's going on and how do I access this support and does this affect me? You've got that sense of things being a bit more slow and steady. And that just seems to be out of the window. We seem to be in, it feels like subdued panic mode in government to me, even though they all look very calm about it.
Yeah, I think we joked before that the since March has just felt like just one long budget day, and except for share playing to wake you up in the morning, it's pretty much felt like Groundhog Day. Ben, how about you? Did this come as a shock to you, this announcement?
Probably not, actually. So, well, yes, as in the timing of it, the fact that they've announced it right in the middle of everything going on, right in the middle of new, you know, legislation with VAT and everything else. So from that point of view, yes, you know, they've not picked a great time to drop this bomb, which could have been part of the tactic, I guess. Let's slip this one in there while people are distracted with everything else. But no, from the sense that, funnily enough, it was only Monday we had a team meeting here. And I actually was saying to some of the managers, I'm surprised we haven't heard anything about this second wave of MTD any time recently. And then suddenly yesterday, here it is. So it's probably my fault. I take full responsibility, everybody.
Nice one, Ben.
Ben, would you like to give everyone your contact details to get in touch?
I guess from the VAT point of view, I mean, that was in the making a few years, and then it got put back, and at least people had a couple of years to prepare and think about it. And I know we've got a long time to think about it again, but it is very much, you know, they've said the pilot will be sort of more broadly available from next year. So I'm not surprised. I didn't think it would ever be cancelled. I think a lot of people thought the MTD for VAT would have been cancelled, and then it wasn't. And they pushed through, and actually I think has worked quite well. So off the back of that, I'm not surprised they've decided to continue with this sort of second wave.
And presumably, as a digital firm like yourself, Ben, this is going to be, you're well prepared for this coming into effect?
Yeah, absolute walk in the park. in no way, shape or form. Yes and no, I guess. I guess it depends on the detail, what they're expecting, how, when, etc. We have, so obviously the first part is kicking in for the second sort of VAT section of it, where everybody who is under the VAT threshold will suddenly have to use MTD. But to be honest, I don't think a lot of people even realise that if you were under the VAT threshold, you didn't need to join it the first time round. I think that was a detail that was missed by quite a lot of people. We took the decision to just put everybody VAT registered onto the MTD scheme. So that sort of next target isn't really going to affect us as such. The one after that, where you start to have a look at income tax, self-assessments, property owners, a lot of that is work done once per year. At the moment, and like a lot of other small practices, you know, yes, we're getting better at getting those done earlier in the year, but it's still a lot of work and it takes up a lot of time. So if they carry on with the plan of doing this four and possibly even five times per year, so a quarterly submission and then a sort of fifth summary submission, that's going to be tricky. As we've seen in the last few months with all of these new schemes, it's that fine line between helping clients out and how do we charge, because as a business ourselves, we're not a charity. We don't have an unlimited pool of resource and time and employees to do this work without paying them. Mm-hmm. So it's that fine line of, okay, we'd love to help our clients, that's what we're about, but we have to charge for that. And when you take this into account and the fact that the fee for an annual self-assessment is already, you know, being pushed, and a lot of clients think that's the maximum they would pay for a self-assessment, do we suddenly charge four times that bill for the same, essentially the same piece of work just spread out? because for us, the actual workload of creating documents, creating a submission, getting it signed off, submitting it to HMRC, that will be four times per year. So for us, it will be increased four times a year. But for the client, they're going to turn around and say, well, it's the same amount of work, it's the same income, so why the extra fee? So yeah, although digital wise, record wise, getting things signed off, of course, being digital and sort of cloud based, that will help us. We're very efficient from that point of view, but the workload will still increase, and that part I'm not too sure about at the moment.
It is interesting you mentioned fees there, Ben, because it's been a big debate and discussion point across the profession over the last several months, with many firms' first instinct is to help out their clients during these tough times, and many of them offering free services to begin with.
Yeah.
And then it comes to that point where you have to look at your own business and realize that how long can you sustain this and keep doing free work? Mm-hmm. Ray, aside from MTD, there was a bunch of other guidance that was released as part of this big dump of prior to recess government guidance. So what else should we be looking out for?
There was quite a lot of interesting stuff. And again, not to just turn this into a long grumble, but I'm baffled as to why this wasn't all bundled up on and announced on July the 8th, along with what wasn't. The Chancellor absolutely insistent wasn't a budget, but felt quite a lot like one at the end of the day. Why all of this wasn't announced on the same day, or at least in the supporting paperwork then, I can only assume they just weren't very well prepared, and it just took them another couple of weeks to get everything together. But obviously the things like consultations on sort of moving along that conversation about business rates is a big one. And obviously talk about sort of reforming tax relief on pensions. All of that is the stuff that's going to sort of grab headlines and grab attention. And that's where you start seeing a sense that things are moving along and moving forward on conversations that have been rumbling along for quite a long time. It feels like some of these consultations have been announced four times. It's actually just different phases in the consultation process. So stuff is moving along, stuff is happening. And I think it, as I believe our colleague John Stockdale pointed out, a lot of this looks like the template for what we're going to see in the budget in the autumn.
Indeed, yeah. And I think there was even a tease of the autumn budget within the documents as well. So hey, that's something else to look forward to. Maybe that's like the series finale of the budgets which we've had this year. It's just been one long season of the Game of Thrones style budget that which we've had this year. All roads lead to autumn budget. So we've had the big MTD announcement. But before this, a week or so ago, we had the summer statement. And one of the big headlines to come from that was, of course, the VAT 5% hospitality cut, which came into effect recently. And so this is on food and drink, apart from alcoholic drinks, which is still subject to 20% VAT, tourist attractions, overnight accommodation. We have an article on accountaweb.co.uk by Neil Warren, which gives a complete overview about the various different aspects of this scheme. But Ben, how have you found this cut? Do you think it's going to experience of it so far, do you think is going to really help these hospitality clients which have really suffered over the last few months?
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting one actually, and I didn't, when it was first announced, I didn't fully take into aspect I guess the morality side of it and how much sort of discussion and arguments it would cause on things like LinkedIn, because you have this balance of some people think the intention of it was to help the owners of these type of businesses in these industries because of how much they've suffered. And so it increases their profitability, but that then relies on them keeping their prices the same and not reducing them to help get customers in. So you've got this fine line of, yes, it could be a massive help to the industries involved, but some people are then saying, well, it's immoral to not pass it on to the customers. So it's been quite an interesting one to follow. I took it like some of these people, where the intention was to help the industry. So keep your prices the same, but we're just going to reduce the VAT on that. But a lot of people, I think, are using it for marketing purposes and saying, you know, come to us, we're much better and nicer because we're going to pass on that reduction to you. Now, obviously, from their business point of view, that scheme then isn't helping them at all, unless it is enough to attract new and more business, which will outweigh the reduction. So it's been quite an interesting one. A few of our restaurant clients have chosen to keep prices the same and just sort of use the extra 15% for themselves. And hopefully that will help them from a sort of a cash flow and profitability point of view. And they've taken the angle that actually this Eat Out to Help Out scheme is more sort of to use for customers and help have them sort of make savings from that point of view. And the VAT is for us as a business to sort of help us increase our profitability. So yeah, it definitely will help for those who use it from their business's point of view and keep the savings themselves. It will help. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with those who are using it as a marketing tool to say, you know, we're going to pass this saving on to you. Come to us.
Yeah, absolutely. The big household names are doing this of just saying they're going to take it off the price. Ray, as a branding exercise, what do you make of that?
Well, I think it's interesting. It's almost the difference between, I think, those volume businesses and those that are selling on differentiation or the quality of the product. So big chains like, although the cut doesn't apply to alcoholic drinks, a chain like Wetherspoon, which is, to all intents and purposes, a fast food chain with booze, has been passing on, has actually managed to use the back cut to reduce the price of beer. So indirectly by reducing the cost of its overall cost, it's able to then pass on a saving. And it's actually, they put adverts outside pubs saying, you know, Rishi has slashed the price of beer, essentially misleadingly. Giving the impression that the government had somehow helped them reduce the price of the drink they were selling. So, I mean, so it's not only the problem that, you know, you've got that moral question, as Ben says, is it about helping your business or is it about passing on a saving to customers? But if you choose to keep your prices the same and a similar business up the road slashes its prices, you actually also end up with stiffer competition. But for a firm like Wetherspoon, it's about filling their branches to what the current reduced capacity. They need as many of those seats filled as possible. So that, yeah, I guess discounting for them makes sense because it's about getting people over the door and hoping they spend enough when they're there.
It will certainly affect the smaller restaurants who maybe they won't be able to pass on to the customers. And if you have the bigger players in the market passing it on, then it may make it even more tough for them to get the bookings, perhaps. Is that what you're finding, Ben?
It's the thing people have talked about for a long time as well, is the loss in the market of the middle. So everything ends up being either sort of large scale and discounted or very bespoke and high end, and you lose a lot of stuff in the middle. And I think that's another area where you risk exacerbating that issue, I think.
Another phrase as part of this VAT cut, which is likely to cause many headaches, which was raised by Neil Warren, is attractions classed as similar cultural events and facilities which would be eligible for the 5%. And in his article on AccountWeb, Neil Warren had an accountant asking if admissions fees to a bingo hall would qualify as a cultural event. And I know Rebecca Bennyworth on our Any Answers Live webcast series brought up another example of a murder mystery event. And so we're probably likely going to see this in the coming weeks and months, of the phrase similar cultural events and facilities being debated amongst accountants and businesses as to whether it is subject to the 5% cut. Ben, have you had any peculiar issues come up like that in regards to the VAT cut?
I'm probably in one of those lucky positions where we don't have many tourist attraction type clients, so most of ours are food and drink based. But I think it's another fine example of something we mentioned earlier, where they will push these schemes out and almost, you know, give us a wink and say, good luck with this, guys. We're going to give you the finer detail in about 2 months' time while you're already in the middle of it. It feels like one of those. So we've not been sort of targeted with too many questions on sort of attractions and events yet. But I'm saddened by the fact that you know, I've scoured the internet in the last week or so for sort of fine detail and the booklets with you know, all of the additional sort of information on these schemes, and they just don't exist yet. It's not good.
Well, let's move on and look at some of the other schemes which were announced in the summer statement. And one of the big flagship announcements which Rishi Sunak announced was the Eat Out to Take Out voucher scheme, which has been coming into effect at the start of August. And this is a 50% off your meal up to £10 per person. And this is, of course, is another way to encourage diners to return to restaurants and to get back out there. This is only available, though, from Monday through to Wednesday. And Ben, I've spoken to you before about this, and although that many of your clients understood the intention behind it, they sort of concluded that it was just poorly thought out.
Yeah, this is another one of those lovely topics which has caused a bit of controversy online and a lot of debates I've been reading about it, and people seem to be split. Half the people think it's great and it's going to be fantastic from sort of consumers' point of view, but also the businesses. And then the other half of the people are saying it's absolute nonsense. And that's probably the side I'm on. So I felt a bit torn because to me, just standing back as a scheme, it's ridiculous. But it's quite bittersweet because obviously it affects a lot of our client base. We deal with a lot of the food and drink industry. So I'd love it for it to work as the sort of intention probably is. For my clients, I'd love to see their bookings increase and their turnover go up. But I personally, I don't think it's going to have any effect at all. I think the people who are going to mostly use this scheme are people who probably already eat out. And all they're going to do is exchange their usual Friday or Saturday meal for a Monday to Wednesday meal because they get it cheaper. And therefore, it's going to have no effect at all. I don't think, you know, you're going to have people who, let's be frank, are usually too lazy to get up and go out for meals, and they just order in takeaways or they just cook at home. Or you have people who can't afford to go out for meals. And I don't think for the sake of 4 weeks and 3 days a week, it's suddenly going to have a massive effect where bookings are going to increase. And the other big issue, which I don't think was thought through, and I've spoken to a lot of our food industry clients about this, is a lot of them don't open Monday to Wednesday. Because to staff a restaurant, you have to have a chef, a front of house, usually an additional person on top of that. For two or three wages over 3 days, they do not have the business to do that. Because historically, a lot of people don't eat out on a Monday to Wednesday. And it was ending up costing more to staff a restaurant for 3 days than they were actually getting in. So for this to work, they have to have, not only does it have to be new business and not just rearranged business, but it also has to be enough to just break even in terms of wages, raw materials, you know, overheads, before they can even see a benefit of profit from this. And that's a big, you know, that's a big amount of business they need. If you take one restaurant and they have to cover wages for 3 days, you're looking at least, I don't know, £500 to £1,000 a week of wages for 3 days. So they have to have enough new business to cover that just to break even. So yeah, I don't know. I just can't see it work. And as I said, I hope it does for my clients' sake and all the other small businesses out there. But I'd be surprised if, you know, if it did have a huge effect.
Ray, have you had any thoughts of this? Are you going to be changing how you eat out? Is it just going to be strictly Monday through to Wednesday now?
My normal Friday, Saturday night enormous banquets will now be taking place on a Monday evening. No, I think the few things that are interesting about this. One were was the flourish with which it was announced in the speech, because we'd all had this trailer that there might be a £500 voucher for every household to spend on the high street. And he said, and finally, with great excitement. And I think we all thought, oh, here it comes. And then he announced this fairly sort of mediocre policy, which he kept adding clauses to, that only applies Monday to Wednesday. And, you know, as thousands of people on Twitter pointed out, it ended up sounding like a sort of Pizza Express meal deal in the end rather than a policy. So it was already pretty underwhelming. And I agree with Ben, it's hard to see really that this will make very much difference, except perhaps I think there are two things. One, if you are a restaurant that opens 7 days a week and you've currently you're turning people away on Friday and Saturday because of your reduced capacity, and you can spread that capacity over the week a little bit because people are incentivized to come Monday to Wednesday, it might help you out a little bit. Again, probably more chains than smaller restaurants. And actually, it's a PR campaign for dining out. What they're trying to do, I think, primarily is get people to just give it a go and see how reassuringly safe restaurants are with the new measures in place, and just get over that anxiety. You lock people up for 3 months, put the fear of God in them, and then say, okay, it's now fine to go out. And people are understandably reluctant. And I think this is just about trying to lure people out and just try it once and see that it's safe, so that going forward, people will be a bit more willing to dine at full price. I think that's primarily what it's about, a PR campaign.
Sure. And there's been a few other announcements which have raised eyebrows as well, including the furlough bonus, where if you bring back your staff furloughed, you get your £1,000 bonus. This, of course, has caused criticism from some people saying that those businesses who are just going to be bringing staff anyway back anyway will be just having a nice windfall out of this. Several big retailers have already queued up to say that they're not going to accept the bonus. So what's your thoughts on this one, Ben? Starting with you.
I don't know who comes up with these nonsense schemes. I really don't. I get that everybody will have different opinions and a lot of people will disagree with me, but this is probably one of the worst schemes I've heard since this whole situation. How, you know, £1,000, £1,500, I even forget what it is, that's how little notice I've taken of it, how that's going to encourage somebody to keep an employee on from October to the end of Jan, who they've obviously kept them furloughed because they haven't got the business to do it, to bring them back, or they can't afford to, and so they've just kept them on furlough. And then, you know, the incentive to keep them on for a further 3 months just for the sake of a £1,000 bonus is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because, you know, if you've got somebody on furlough by the end of October, you need to make a decision. Can we afford to keep this person on, or will we have to let them go? I don't think they're going to think, right, if we keep them on and pay them £3,000-£4,000 over the next 3 months, we get £1,000 of it back. Excellent. What a win. It's the most silly thing I've ever heard. And I think, you know, if people have bought, you know, it's great for those people. And I guess this is what you've just mentioned, the morality of whether you accept it or not. Because if you've had somebody on furlough and you've brought them back and you've kept them to the end of January, you get the bonus. And I think at that point, you've managed to do that because you need them and you can afford them. So I don't really see the point then in £1,000. And for the people who can't afford to keep them and can't afford to bring them back, that £1,000 isn't going to make a difference. You've had to spend out more keeping them on board till Jan than you're going to get back from the scheme. So it's literally only going to benefit those who can already afford to bring these people back and keep them on. So, you know, I don't really see the point of it at all myself.
And Ray, if it does anything, though, it does put a full stop on the furlough scheme, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that seemed to me to be the message that the Chancellor was most keen to get across, was, you know, this is the furlough will be ending. I will not be extending. And actually, as someone who's come across as quite a kind of people pleasing Chancellor who likes to say things that people will like to hear, he was actually fairly uncharacteristically firm on that point in his speech, that the furlough scheme cannot drag on forever. And, you know, at some point it has to come to an end. It's not healthy to keep it going. But yeah, I think even as he spoke the words explaining this new policy, you could see that it seemed to be thinking, actually, is this a great idea? As a few people have said, either you can already afford to keep your employees on, in which case £1,000 is neither here nor there, or you can't, in which case it won't change your mind. It's hard to think of anyone who's going to do anything differently off the back of this policy, really. I'm quite intrigued as to why some of those big businesses have made a show of turning it down. I think it's, again, largely PR and a question of wanting to be sort of be seen to be not claiming grants or benefits they don't need. But I wonder also if it's something to do with they've looked at the potential paperwork involved in filing claims for however many thousands of employees, and they've just thought, you know what, it's going to cost us more to administer than we'll get from it. We'll also get a bit of PR by turning it down. That's my guess.
Yeah, that, well, the PR exercise is coming up quite a lot today about how some of these big brands are taking, making the most of these schemes. One scheme, though, which did catch my interest, and Ben, I'd like to get your thoughts on it, is the apprenticeship scheme and Kickstarter schemes, because I know you've written for us previously on Account Web and argued about how the profession should make more of consider a new strategy to recruiting staff. And I know that you've been really integral into getting into schools and trying to encourage school children to look at the profession as an option after they leave education. So what's your thoughts on these two schemes designed to get people employed, especially young people?
Yeah, as a scheme and the intention behind it, I was really pleased to see more encouragement and more up-to-date encouragement for apprenticeships and young people. And specifically for our industry, I've always been an advocate for bringing on young people from, you know, even as early as school leaving age to sort of colleges and also graduates. So it was only, 3 weeks ago we've taken on a graduate here. And he's doing fantastic. And the reason I've always been an advocate of it is because, you know, our industry has had this huge shift towards tech and cloud and digital technology. And if anybody knows that stuff off by heart with their eyes closed, it's the young people. Mm-hmm. So yes, they still need that background technical knowledge, and that will come with experience and qualifications. But you can get them into the workplace, you can get them working, you know, and doing something for you while they do that as well. That's how I started off, and that's why I know it can work. It was quite nice to see these new schemes targeted at sort of encouraging people to do that. And I hope every industry gets involved with that, you know, not just accountancy, but I hope every industry looks at this as a chance to, you know, whether they do it to help themselves, because, you know, you've got the Kickstart scheme, which will basically give you a free employee for 25 hours a week for 6 months. But from the young person's point of view, that gives them is experience and, you know, added additions to their CV. So it will help, you know, however you use it and whatever your intentions are, both sides will benefit. And that's why I quite liked this scheme. For a change, they did quite well, I think, with this one. So, from my point of view, you know, I had the added bonus of it being in an area that I've always believed in and tried to push.
Yeah, Ray, it seems like this one, it hasn't really attracted any sort of cynicism as perhaps the other ones have. It seems mostly a positive scheme.
Yeah, I think it feels, as Ben suggests there, it just feels a bit better thought through, whereas the others were sort of felt like they'd been hacked away at on as they were trying to make them come to the, you know, the costing work out. This one just feels a bit better thought out, and it chimes with a sense, I think, that we, you know, we want to avoid a lost generation like we had in 2008 of young people leaving education and finding themselves in a bit of a sort of economic wasteland. It feels like it's actually trying to do something to help that specific cohort. And it's been really interesting talking to people. On the day of the announcement, I was talking to accountants as I was putting together the budget report for PracticeWeb. And one of the people I was talking to said, you know, that they'd been thinking about outsourcing some of their work to India, and this had effectively made it easier for them to decide to recruit instead. So it's exactly that kind of nudge of people's behaviour that the government hopes to achieve with policies like this, to say, you know, people that might have been thinking about it or just on the verge of, you know, trying to work out if they can make the cost work for them, say, actually, right, this now makes it a no-brainer, I'm going to do it. It just gives people that little nudge to do what the government essentially wants them to do, which is create jobs.
And certainly over the last few years, we have felt the effect of the 2008 financial crisis and how that dried up the recruitment drive within the profession. So hopefully this may encourage some of the some firms to keep going and to recruit staff, so later down the line we wouldn't have a similar issue where firms are scrabbling to get good candidates. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what one of the barriers for sort of smaller practices is that way up of, okay, you know, I'd like the idea of taking on a trainee, but that is then a wage, and we have to offset that against how much time it's going to take to train and guide that person. And that put a lot of people off, because, you know, not only was it an additional wage cost, but there was then a lot of time on top of that for everybody else to chip in and help that young person. But I think now that the fact that this person's going to be coming on completely free and paid for, hopefully people will say, okay, you know, it will have a bit of a time input and an impact on the firm, but we're getting this person for free. And that on the moral side, you know, they're able to give this young person training and experience to their news. And hopefully, you know, after 6 months of being on board and being trained up, these firms will then, you know, I guess that's the idea of it, is they'll then employ them. And even if they don't, they've given them enough skills and experience to go in and get similar employment with another firm. So, yeah, I'm quite excited for that one.
Good stuff. Well, I'm sorry to say that we've ran out of time for today's podcast. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Ray, where can we find out a little bit more about yourself and Practice Web?
You can find me on LinkedIn, where I am. I can never remember my own address on LinkedIn. Ray-Newman-Writer, or just search Ray Newman. And also you'll find me writing on the Practice Web blog at practiceweb.co.uk/knowledge, where the latest thing we're going to put out is a beginner's guide to SEO, which is due in the next week or so.
There we go, something to look forward to. And Ben, how about yourself? Where can we find out more info about you and Still Financial?
Yeah, so probably mostly LinkedIn at the moment. I'm trying to be a bit more active on there. So I'm always saying some sort of nonsense every day on LinkedIn. So Ben Steele, STELE. Don't look on the website because we're currently having a new one made. So the current one is an old version, and we're in the process of having a brand new one made. So I'll probably no doubt post on LinkedIn when that's ready for everybody to have a nose at.
Excellent. And for all your news from the world of accountancy, please join us on accountweb.co.uk. And until next time, I've been Richard Hattersley. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time on No Accounting for Taste. Bye for now.